just standing there.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels. This is Sunday, January 15th, 2017. And today's title is The Morning Report. Yes, The Morning Report. Now, as many of you know, the theme of my show is that at least 880,000 Americans every year die at the hands of their medical therapy. Yep, that's a lot, especially when you consider there's only 2.6 million deaths a year. Fully about 40% of people die as a result of their medical therapy, not their disease. So I ask myself, why are people still making appointments with doctors, keeping appointments, submitting to tests, submitting to surgery, and going to hospitals? Why? And I said to myself, it must be because they have not heard the morning report. What is the morning report? The morning report is a special information summary that is sent to your doctor's inbox. And it tells him all about medical therapies, many of which are ineffective and harmful, and says, don't worry, just keep doing it. Correct. And I think that if citizens were aware of the morning report and what was in the morning report, that maybe a few lives could be saved. So tonight, I am going to share with you the contents of a few morning reports. And these reports disclose modern, dangerous, ineffective therapies, while at the same time urging doctors to continue using them. As always, think happens. So let's just take a little sampling here. This is a morning report from January 6, 2017. So it's pretty recent morning report. And the first topic of the morning report is the use of psychiatric medications. And so it talks about researchers who analyzed data from 2013 Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. What does that mean? Well, medical expenditure means that the information came from money spent on medical care. In other words, insurance reports. In other words, your insurance reports are not private. Okay. So, which includes information on the use of multiple classes of psychiatric medications. Apparently, approximately 1 in 6 adults in the United States reported taking one of these drugs, with higher use in women and those over 60. Use was highest in white patients, just over double the reported use in blacks or Hispanic adults, and 4 times the use reported by Asians. Now, we can just stop right here and take a look. Okay, we're talking about psychiatric medications. So if we believe the regular literature, supposedly African Americans have a lot more pressure and psychiatric issues than whites. So how come they're using half as much medications? And how come Hispanic adults are also using half as much medications? By the way, Hispanic adults are also living 7 years longer than the average white person, just by the way, although blacks are living less. Well, we can say then, because the longevity here is all over the board, that the use of psychiatric medications is apparently a cultural practice, not a medical practice. In other words, not related to medical condition. And, of course, 4 times the use reported by Asians. Now, Asians, of course, obviously, they're from a different culture. You would think there might be a lot of adjustment issues. Yet, the Asians use 1/4 or receive 1/4 as many psychiatric medications. In the large majority of these patients, over 84%, use was considered long-term in all drug classes. Now remember, your doctor's reading this. So your doctor's reading this, he says, like, one group uses X amount, another one uses half as much, another one uses 1/4 as much, and there's really not any big difference among these groups. Not a big enough medical difference that would account for the variation in psychiatric drug consumption or prescription or recommendation. So immediately, the doctor reading this knows that the use of psychiatric medications is arbitrary and capricious. In other words, unrelated to the person's medical condition. Okay. So researchers warn that these statistics are red flags. There's been little research, read no research, on the safety of these medications for extended periods of time. They also caution that 8 of the 10 most widely used medications have warnings about withdrawal or rebound symptoms. In other words, they are addictive. So doctors are creating drug addicts in the white population at 4 times the rate that they're creating drug addicts in the Asian population. Basically, we won't have to at least conclude that much. Both patients and physicians should consider periodic re-evaluation. Does your patient continue to need psychiatric medication? Well, from reading already, the question really is, did your patient ever need psychiatric medication? And so they say these include multiple serotonin reuptake inhibitors, that's SSRIs. Those are the ones people take right before they go out on a killing spree. Benzodiazepines, like Valium, for example, and hypnotics, sleeping pills like Ambien, for example. The full list can be found on our website. How nice. So here we have the morning report. They tell the doctor that these psychiatric medications are essentially unnecessary. In other words, if the Asians do perfectly fine with 1/4 the amount of medications as the white population and don't seem to be any worse off because of it, then does the white population even need those drugs? Well, probably not. And if 84% of them are receiving these medications long-term, and there's been no research indicating that they're safe long-term, then wouldn't you say to the doctor, stop prescribing these things and certainly don't use them long-term? Let the patient know it's a temporary thing just for 2 or 3 weeks to help them through a rough spot? No, that's not what they're told. They're told, go ahead, keep prescribing it just as you are, but every now and then, do a periodic reevaluation. Why would you need a periodic reevaluation unless you've already got the person on this stuff long term? Why not just don't get started in the first place? No, they don't tell your doctor that. And then they ask, does your patient continue to need psychiatric medication? And they don't ask the obvious question, which the data suggests, which is, did the patient ever need psychiatric medication? Okay, so we have these psychiatric medications. They basically suggested to the doctor these are not necessary, but keep prescribing them and just check periodically. All right, patient outcomes, female and male physicians. So this one you have to read between the lines, but this is an interesting one. There's new evidence that patient outcomes are better with female physicians than with male physicians. I wonder why. So let's see, maybe they'll tell us. After analyzing data from 1.5 million Medicare patient hospitalizations over 3 years, researchers working with the Harvard School of Public Health found lower mortality, that's death, and readmission rates across all medical conditions for patients under the care of female physicians. Well, you would think then that lives could be saved just by having more female physicians in the hospital, and that neglecting to do so, the hospital in question might be, you know, indirectly responsible for excess mortality here. But let's see. So investigators write that these results validate, that means agree with or suggest the truthfulness of, earlier findings that techniques typically used more by women, including, let's get this, patient-centered communication, longer visits, use of encouragement and reassurance are associated with better outcomes. The results also challenge concerns that the quality of care by female physicians may be compromised by their desire to balance work and family responsibilities. These same arguments have also been used to justify the disparity between male and female doctors when it comes to pay and professional advancement. Perhaps the increased focus on pay for performance will reward women for the better treatment outcomes. Well, of course, the question is, what is the performance measure? And obviously, if you're talking about hospitals, which is what they're talking about here, you're going to reward the doctor that has the better financial outcome for the hospital. And as we've mentioned in prior episodes, hospital revenue for an admission where the patient dies is on average 5 to 10 times as much as the revenue for an admission where the patient lives. So clearly then, if you're using performance measure outcomes for male and female physicians, and we see here that the mortality is lower for female physicians, then clearly the hospital's profit for female physicians is much lower. So we can expect them to continue to get low pay. But the interesting here is patient-centered communication. In other words, the female patients are, female doctors are talking to the patient about what the patient wants, not about so much the standard of care. And we can infer from the conversation, which is patient-centered, not standard of care-centered, that these women doctors are deviating from the standard of care more often and people are living. Now, as a female physician reading this, probably a female physician would say, geez, I should be getting paid more money, not realizing that her lower mortality rate is actually hurting hospital profits. And if you're a male physician, you'd read this and accurately deduce that these women are not sticking to the standard of care, and by golly, you are going to stick to the standard of care and do a superior job. So here we have the morning report not creating a safer situation at all for patients. And finally, in this particular episode or installment of the morning report, pain tolerance and silent heart attacks. Okay, so let's get this straight. We now are putting patients on, or doctors are putting patients on unnecessary psychiatric drugs, turning them into drug addicts. Gotcha. Patient outcomes, female versus male physicians, they're paying more for the physicians that kill more patients. Okay. Now, the third thing is, finally, your patient's high tolerance to pain could mask their ability to recognize symptoms of heart attacks. And Norwegian researchers made the connection when exploring why symptoms of heart attacks are easy to recognize in some patients, but not so easy in others. So the study included 5,000 patients. Now, this is 5,000 patients. Notice that the study about death in hospitals was 1.5 million patients. Okay, so we can have some relative understanding of accuracy here. The study included 5,000 patients who got cold pressor testing, which is when you keep your hand in freezing water as long as possible for up to 2 minutes. The participants with a previously unrecognized heart attack were able to endure the cold much longer than those with a known heart attack. This association was particularly notable in women. They were almost 50% less likely to stop the test if they had a history of an unrecognized heart attack. Again, a 50% correlation is pretty poor. Absence of complaints of chest pain should not keep us meaning doctors, from suspecting ischemic heart disease. That means blocked arteries or heart attack. When evaluating patients without a significant history of cardiovascular disease, especially in a situation of symptoms such as shortness of breath, swelling feet, it's important to consider the possibility of a silent heart attack resulting in heart failure. So, we've indicated that doctors are definitely harming people with these psychiatric drugs. Then we figured out that patient outcomes, male versus female, that more compensation is being given for doctors who are more deadly. And then they're saying to doctors, hey, you need to reach a little further and treat heart attacks of people who are not complaining of heart attacks. Interesting. So let's take a look at another morning report. Yep. Another morning report. Okay. And this is another three-part morning report. First one is type 2 diabetes, aspirin, and heart disease. So let's see what they have to say about that. Aspirin does not prevent cardiovascular events, we call it heart attacks, and stroke in patients with type 2 diabetes. Interesting. Now remember, doctors have been instructed, standard of care, to put all diabetics on an aspirin a day. This is over the years. This is what has been recommended. So now they're finding this is absolutely not beneficial. So the Japanese primary prevention of atherosclerosis, that means preventing the first heart attack with aspirin for diabetes study, involved more than 2,500 patients with type 2 diabetes who were randomly assigned to low-dose aspirin or no aspirin. The initial findings at about 4 years showed no effect of aspirin on sudden death, heart disease, stroke, or peripheral artery disease. This is shocking. It didn't show an effect on any of these. And this is outrageous when you think of an aspirin a day increasing a person's chances for kidney failure and for bleeding to death. So this is a serious risk you're asking someone to take on for something that is useless. So the researchers then followed the cohort to 10 years, again, hoping to find a benefit, during which aspirin therapy was decided by the treating doctor. So the doctor then was able to decide, you get aspirin and you don't get aspirin. Of course, this is thinking that the doctors, with their medical judgment, could determine who was likely to benefit. Researchers then followed the cohort to 10 years. The findings were essentially the same. Aspirin did not prevent cardiovascular events. The researchers think the negative aspirin results in this study versus past research may be due to the increased use of statins now. Now, just pause right there, because we know that statins increase the incidence of stroke. In Europe, the guidelines already do not recommend aspirin for primary prevention of cardiovascular events in patients with type 2 diabetes, except in high-risk cases. And we know, of course, from the study that even the high-risk cases, there's no benefit. It may be time for the American guidelines to be revisited and changed. Whoa, wait, back up. Doctors have been doing this totally useless intervention for how many years? Several years. Do you think you could tell the doctors to go look back over their charts of all the diabetic patients, call them up and tell them to stop that aspirin? Do you think they might recommend that? No. They're just saying it might be time for the American guidelines to be revisited and changed. So we're telling the doctors, keep doing what you're doing, and it might be time for whoever handles guidelines to take a look at them and change them. So here we have an intervention with known risks, known hazards, known harm, and no benefit. And what's the doctor told to do? Continue as you are, and it might be time for the American guidelines to be revisited and changed. Who exactly does that? I don't know, but I'll tell you, the regular doctor in his office certainly doesn't. So he's all but been commanded not to take independent action or any initiative, whatever. All right. Next up on our morning report. Proton pump inhibitors and stroke. So proton pump inhibitors, these are things that like Nexium, Protonix. Danish researchers have found an association between the use of proton pump inhibitors and risk of first-time ischemic stroke. Preclinical studies have suggested a biological basis for this finding. In other words, if you believe what doctors are told about how the body functions, then it's reasonable to deduce that proton pump inhibitors would indeed cause strokes. When we come back, we'll talk more about that.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Hi, folks. In a world of GMO, genetically modified organisms, that is, chemicals, processed foods, and a healthcare system that's unraveling like a cheap suit, it's time to prepare. God created herbs, and herbs help man. Our body can heal itself, just sometimes we need assistance. You need some help? GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Our mild detox is quite powerful with its unique blend of 8 different herbs. And if you're looking for more, our non-GMO supplements will help you with different needs you might have. Health should be a top priority. Take care of your health naturally. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Give your body a treat. Let the herbs do their thing naturally. Read all the testimonies on the website. GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Sickness and viruses are like intruders, and herbs are like warriors. Let the tea work for you. That's GetTheTea.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Give such delight.
This is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. And so we are talking today about the morning report. And so we've just figured out that low-dose aspirin is, well, useless. And so proton pump inhibitors and stroke. So preclinical studies suggested the biological basis for why proton pump inhibitors would cause stroke. So this is a logical, sensible cause and effect thing, really to be expected. However, and observational studies already show a link between proton pump inhibitors and heart disease. So now these proton pump inhibitors cause heart disease as well. But this was the first study to link proton pump inhibitors with stroke, and the risk is dose dependent. So the more proton pump inhibitors you take, the greater your chance of having a stroke. Of interest, there was not an increased risk of stroke with H2 blocker class of drug. This is a different class of drug that helps alkalinize the stomach. So proton pump inhibitors are a stronger agent and create a more alkaline environment in the stomach. And they're associated with increased heart disease and now increased stroke. And the increase is dose dependent, definitely suggesting a cause and effect relationship. The study included almost 250,000 patients, that would be almost 250,000, and looked at 4 of the most popular proton pump inhibitors: omeprazole, pantoprazole, lansoprazole, and esomeprazole, some of which are available over the counter. Although the stroke incidence rate was higher in people who took proton pump inhibitors, this observational study does not prove causation. Patients who have a clear reason for proton pump inhibitor therapy should continue their medication. Okay, So, I wish they would let the Zika virus off this easy. But we have a dose-dependent relationship. The more proton pump inhibitors you use, the more stroke you have. And proton pump inhibitors have been shown to increase heart disease as well. Proton pump inhibitors are given to treat indigestion and heartburn. These are conditions that are not life-threatening, but they create complications, heart disease and stroke, that are life-threatening. And this is how you create a medical system that creates death, that creates 880,000 or more deaths per year from medical care. How? You take a condition that is not deadly and treat it with a drug that is deadly. So here's the doctor looking at the situation. Proton pump inhibitors, the more he prescribes, the more people have a stroke. The more people have strokes, the more people die of strokes, of course. Now, as a doctor, you can read this and say, well, you know, the FDA approved it for over-the-counter use, so of course I can write prescriptions for it. An incredible situation here. And again, the writer of the morning report could say, look, drugs are dangerous. Why give a deadly drug for a non-deadly condition? But instead, what's the word? Patients who have a clear indication, that means official reason, for proton pump inhibitor therapy should continue their medication. It's dangerous, it's deadly, but what the heck, do it anyway. All right, so here we've got the aspirin to prevent heart disease, but guess what? It doesn't work. Then we have the proton pump inhibitors. They help with indigestion, but guess what? They cause stroke and heart disease, but prescribe them anyway. And then finally, psilocybin, a game changer for severe anxiety and depression. And these are psychedelic mushrooms. The psychoactive drug, psilocybin, is being hailed as a game changer, that's an unscientific term, for late-stage cancer patients with depression and anxiety. So we have late-stage cancer patients, which means apparently their therapy is not working. So you may have heard it as the active ingredient in the recreational drug known as magic mushrooms. Psilocybin produces a mystical, another non-scientific term, altered state of consciousness that contributes to a positive mood, a greater life satisfaction, and improved spiritual well-being. We'll talk more about this when we get back.
No, please don't go.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite. You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, so we're talking about the morning report. This is a report that doctors receive, letting them know the latest in medicine and how they should treat you. And, of course, what's curious is the large number of ineffective and dangerous therapies that are mentioned and how the doctors are told, but just go ahead and prescribe it. So this one is psilocybin, which is basically psychedelic mushrooms. And so what they're saying is it produces a mystical altered state of consciousness that contributes to a positive mood, greater life satisfaction, and improved spiritual well-being, of course, in late-stage cancer patients. And it's a hallucinogen, and they say non-addictive, and has low toxicity. This is the mushroom. Two separate studies show that a single high dose, now again, a person smoking mushrooms is not going to get a high dose. They're going to take a, you know, this is a dose from mushrooms that have many other constituents in them. Okay, but medically speaking, they're going to give a single high dose of this refined substance, psilocybin, that it had a rapid, clinically significant, and long-lasting effect in 90% of patients. The fact that both studies yielded similar results has experts saying that the findings could open up a new era of drug treatment in psychiatry. While more studies are needed, this research brings hope that the hallucinogen may have applications for treating patients other than those suffering from cancer. Okay, so a lot of things wrong with this discussion here. First of all, we have this drug, which is a portion or present in mushrooms, which people have used for recreational purposes. This might be comparable to cannabis or cannabinol in marijuana, for example. And so the medical industrial complex has seen fit to isolate what they perceive to be the active ingredient and now administer it in a single high dose, which is not at all the way people use mushrooms. They take the mushroom, grind it up, and smoke the powder. And so we have the route of administration has changed, the concentration has changed, the dose has changed, the method of use, yet I believe this is going to continue to be safe. And we have this in the backdrop of in the same morning report, doctors have been administering aspirin, a deadly drug, ineffectively, I mean, for an application for which it's useless for many years in endangering people. The proton pump inhibitors, doctors are using this liberally, and it's causing stroke, but they're going to continue to do it. And now they're asking people to trust doctors, or they're asking doctors even to trust themselves, and prescribe a recreational drug. It makes no sense. Obviously, the psilocybin, once entered into the medical framework of refine it, increase the dose, change the route, can be expected to become just about as deadly as anything else doctors do, just because of the way that it's administered. But doesn't stop there. There are more morning reports. So this next morning report is from November 2016. And it talks about colorectal cancer screening. So this is screening people for cancer of the colon, basically. And it says, first we look at a new consensus statement for screening average risk patients for colorectal cancer. While colonoscopy has long been the gold standard for colorectal cancer screening, the United States Multi-Society Task Force now recommends fecal immunochemical testing, that means a stool sample, as an alternative to colonoscopy, that means putting a big fat tube up the patient's butt and sodomizing them. Okay, so the stool sample is appealing because it's non-invasive. In other words, you don't have to get sodomized. Annual option, and it's more specific than guaiac-based fecal occult blood tests. Specific means that it says no when there's no cancer present. Also, patient compliance, that means the patient's willingness to do it, is much better than with colonoscopy or the guaiac test. However, it's about 80% sensitive for detecting cancer. In other words, if it's 80% sensitive, that means it's going to miss 20% of cancers. And 20 to 30% sensitive for detecting advanced adenomas. That means it's going to miss about 70% of advanced cancers. Okay, interesting. However, colonoscopy can do one important thing that this test does not. It can detect and remove polyps and prevent a cancer from ever developing. Patients who opt for this easier test need to understand this difference, and they need to realize that a colonoscopy will still be needed if the test is positive. Okay, so what's wrong with this description? Well, all we have to do is take a look at the Harvard Health publications of Harvard Medical School. And what do they say? Does colonoscopy save lives? A recent study suggests it might, but it's not the last word. In other words, there's not really been a study comparing people screened with colonoscopy and comparing people not screened to determine if colonoscopy is even effective. The wisdom of colonoscopy screening seems obvious. The test enables a doctor to examine the lining of the entire colon and to remove small, potentially precancerous growths called polyps during the exam. As a result, it has the potential, that means not really, but maybe, to detect colon cancer early, but also prevent new cases by removing polyps. It is generally assumed that colonoscopy, that means there's no evidence, it means there's no proof, just an assumption, that colonoscopy saves lives because the procedure is good at detecting early disease. So in 2012, issue of the New England Journal of Medicine supports this assumption. Study included 2,600 people who had polyps removed during colonoscopies that were ordered because of findings on other screening tests, symptoms, or family history. During an average follow-up period of 16 years, 12 people in the study died of colorectal cancer, which was less than half of the 25 deaths from colon cancer normally expected in a group that size drawn to the general population. However, study has limitations. The people who had polyps removed had fewer risk factors for colon cancer than the general population. They did, in fact, have a much lower death rate from all causes, which suggests that they were not a randomly selected population representative of the general population. They may have been healthier overall. Most importantly, this was not a randomized trial. In other words, people themselves were selected in a biased manner. And so it wasn't designed to compare a screened population with an unscreened one, but a study that made use of existing data to make comparisons. So in other words, since the study did not compare a screened population to an unscreened population, it doesn't answer the question of whether or not colonoscopy saves lives, and we still have no evidence that it saves lives. Okay. So, understanding that, that takes us back to the morning report. And so the morning report talks about colonoscopy, a procedure where we have no evidence of its effectiveness, and replacing it with another procedure. Not replacing it, putting another procedure in front of it. That's, again, going to create a flood of false positives and false negatives to spur more people to get colonoscopy. And what do they say? All it says is patients who opt for this screening test need to understand that they still need to get a colonoscopy if the screening test shows something positive. So we have one unproven test thrown on top of another unproven test, which is simply another layer of torture to put people through, and another layer of billing. If this was a union, we would call it feather bedding. And again, as a doctor reading this, you have to scratch your head and say, well, wait, how is this helping anybody? Okay, alcohol use and abuse in women. That means alcohol use and alcohol abuse in women. So for centuries, men were considered the bigger drinkers of the two sexes and the most likely to abuse alcohol and suffer alcohol-related harms. But this gender gap is closing. A recent study focuses attention on a rise in alcohol intake, especially among young women, and the health issues that this can bring. In a review of 68 worldwide studies with more than 4 million subjects, researchers analyzed three categories of alcohol consumption in men and women: any alcohol, problematic alcohol use, and alcohol-related harm. Over a 35-year period, the gap between men and women narrowed in all three categories. In a majority of studies, this was due to women drinking more rather than men drinking less. Excellent marketing on the part of the alcohol companies. The gap narrowed faster among those born after 66, and the change was more pronounced in those born in the 1990s or later. That means people who are 26 years old or less. As clinicians, we need to recognize the use and abuse of alcohol should not be viewed as a men-only issue. Young women in particular should be the target of efforts to reduce alcohol abuse and the problems that come with it. And of course, what does this say? The doctors is that we have to look for alcohol abuse in women, and of course, subject them to our same totally ineffective methods that we use for men. This is really unfortunate that more women are drinking. And this is totally, I think, a fallout or a consequence of women seeing themselves as equal to men, rather than saying, I'm not a man, I'm different, I'm a woman, I'm going to be having children, I don't want to drink alcohol because I want to have healthy babies, or I don't want to drink alcohol because I've got to take care of this kid and be a good mother. And so because women don't even identify with the mother role, they don't see any need to curtail this alcohol use or to treat themselves or their body any differently from men, which is really unfortunate. And so this is just a heads up to doctors, like, hey, these women are just like men. No difference here. All right. The next one is calcium. Again, though, the issue here with this whole alcohol thing is that it's not like doctors have effective therapy for this. However, as a doctor, one can ask and at least not use recommend medications for women that have an interaction with alcohol. All right, calcium and cardiovascular disease. This is an interesting one, so listen carefully for this one. Again, this is the morning report. A new clinical guideline for the National Osteoporosis Foundation states that dietary and supplemental calcium are safe for cardiovascular health. Now, nevertheless, cardiologists prescribe something called calcium channel blockers to prevent the heart from using or utilizing calcium, just by the way. Calcium from food is the preferred source with recommended intakes of 1,000 to 1,300 milligrams per day. A 2010 meta-analysis, that means an analysis of tons of different studies, showed that calcium increased the risk for heart attack and stroke. However, a subsequent review concluded that calcium had no statistically significant effects on coronary disease events or mortality in general healthy adults. And then, of course, for the doctor, this is very confusing. If calcium doesn't adversely affect the heart, then how can calcium channel blockers help the heart? All right. So calcium supplements can be used to correct shortfalls in intake, but more is not necessarily better. We know that calcium supplements can increase kidney stones, while dietary calcium does not. Well, there's a head-scratcher. Why would I, as a doctor, recommend calcium supplements to increase kidney stones in order to prevent osteoporosis? That's crazy. But they're suggesting here, don't worry, give calcium supplements to correct shortfalls in intake, even though they can increase kidney stones, even though dietary calcium doesn't. And so, literally, this morning report is urging doctors to do harm by using calcium supplements. Why can't the doctor just get a list of high calcium foods and tell the lady, look, eat enough to reach 1,300 milligrams a day? But no, doctors are actually urged and encouraged to recommend supplementation, which has just been told causes kidney stones. I personally don't recommend calcium supplements. I don't think it's a good idea at all. There's the morning report. But of course, it does not stop there. Now, another thing going on with our young people, just by the way, in terms of this alcohol intake, I know it's with my kids. So I have three kids. One is 30 years old, one is 27, and one is 23, let's say. And so the younger they get, the higher the alcohol use. And so I talk to the kids and try to figure out just where did this come from, because I don't drink. We didn't have any alcohol in the house. Just wasn't anything anybody did. So I didn't drink. Grandma didn't drink. Just don't drink. But it seems to be a big college thing. It's encouraged in college. Kids get time off for drinking, They're encouraged to drink. They organize the school schedule around drinking. and they are encouraged to go to clubs. It's considered networking, and it's a real head shaker. All right, so what else we know about these? So where did that come from? Well, young people are getting colon cancer, and colon cancer's increase is always is increased as a result of drinking alcohol. It's a major risk factor. Okay, so we start with disturbing news about the increase in colorectal cancer in young patients. Researchers aren't sure why this is occurring. So obviously, you know, the prior report tells you they're drinking more, right?
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com.
This is Dr. Bill Deagle of the NutriMedical Report, 12 to 3, Monday to Friday. Call-ins are welcome to the show. You can order at 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com.
And welcome back, rather, to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, so we are doing the morning report, and this is a report that your doctor gets in his morning box, mailbox. Okay, so here they're telling us that young people are getting colon cancer. And so researchers are not sure why this is occurring, but in our previous morning report, we're told that women are drinking at younger ages. And so we can also guess that men are drinking at these same younger ages, and we know that alcohol is a major risk factor for colon cancer. Now, the other thing about young people, people in their 20s especially, 20 to 34, is these people from age 18 to 22, and maybe even if they go to graduate school, we'll take that up to 26, are in a situation where they're living on fast food and dormitory food, which is extremely dangerous and hazardous. And that is likely to create, A, constipation, and B, an increase in toxins and chemicals in the colon that are irritating and carcinogenic. All right, but the medical industrial complex is totally befuddled here. So researchers aren't sure why this is occurring, which means, code word to the doctors, researchers aren't sure why, then you don't need to sort of worry about it either. Wait until they tell you. American Cancer Society predicts 136,000 new cases in 2016, of which 1 in 7 will be under the age of 50. A recent study showed the rates among this group increased by more than 11% between 2004 and 2014. It would be interesting to correlate the increase in college attendance. And it's predicted that colon cancer among people aged 20 to 34 will increase by 90% by 2030. Some minority populations, including African Americans and Native Alaskans, are 2 to 3 times, respectively, more likely to be diagnosed at a young age. So current guidelines call for screening to begin for more patients at the age of 50. Now, the African American populations and Native Alaskan populations may be more likely to be fed by government programs, just by the way. In other words, we're looking at things like dairy. Okay. This means that younger patients may not be diagnosed until the cancer is advanced, in some cases after months to years of symptoms that would raise red flags in older adults. So when I was practicing medicine in the 90s, I was shocked that a family that was in the practice, they had a son who was in college, and the son was diagnosed with colon cancer. And so they brought him to see me after he was diagnosed with colon cancer. And, of course, he was a college student who lived on cheese pizzas and was constantly constipated. And he ultimately died at the age of 23 of colon cancer. And so the answer, what they're saying to the medical industrial complex is screen sooner, more when we come back.
I saw you there, just standing there.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.